Hey there, Jason Whiteley with a special episode of Yolitics here. I just did an interview for our other program called Inside Texas Politics. It airs on TV every Sunday morning across the state. If you haven't seen it, I hope you'll take a look at it. But this interview was so interesting that we wanted to let you hear it. The entire thing, not the shortened version that will air on TV. The interview is with a guy named Brian Weiss. If you've watched Texas politics for a minute, you probably know who Brian Weiss is. He was a special prosecutor who was going to take Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton to trial, to criminal trial next month for securities fraud charges. These are two felony charges. These are the ones that have been pending for almost 8 years. But this week, the huge political news, the bombshell, Ken Paxton and Brian Weiss agreed to a settlement to drop the charges. Now, Paxton would not have to admit to doing anything wrong. He wouldn't have to say whether he is innocent or guilty. But in exchange, Paxton did agree to pay restitution. He will have to do some community service work, and he'll have to take some legal training classes. Now, here's what surprised us about all of this. Why make the agreement after 9 years, right on the eve of the criminal trial that so many people are going to be watching? And here you go. Why isn't the actual settlement in the case going to be made public so we can all see it? We had a lot of questions for the man who made the deal. Brian Weiss took our call from his Houston office.
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Yolitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Brian, thanks for joining us here. This case was just weeks away from going to trial. A lot of people wondering, why settle it at the last minute?
First of all, most folks don't realize that the lion's share of all criminal cases that are ever filed ever see the inside of a courtroom in front of a jury. It is not at all uncommon for cases to settle 3 weeks before trial, 3 days before trial, 3 hours with the jury in the hallway before trial. So the timing wasn't all that unusual when you look at it through the prism of the criminal justice system that I've seen every day for the last 45 years.
Ken Paxton's a polarizing figure. People have a lot of feelings about him, either for him or against him here. What kind of feedback have you gotten?
You know what? Over the course of the last, 5 days since the story broke in the Austin American-Statesman, I have been inundated with a plethora, there's a couple of good words for you, with calls largely from block numbers, the most hateful, vile, vitriolic, and defamatory emails from people who have literally called me everything but a child of God. And of course, my response to that is, if you want to boo me, that's fine. It's like noted legal sage Reggie Jackson once said, they don't boo nobodies. And I recognize that these people, as you so poignantly put it, have very strong feelings about our attorney general. But the time to have registered their monumental distaste for Ken Paxton isn't by going to my inbox, but by going to the ballot box. And if these people had done just that, I'm not suggesting there's a different outcome. But again, I understand your legitimate concern with the nature of the deal. But to the extent that they have attacked me personally, look, Jason, I learned a very long time ago, being a prosecutor came to me late in life. But what I learned the hard way is what they teach baby prosecutors the first day of baby prosecutor school. Look, if you want to be the most popular girl in middle school, for the love of God, don't be a prosecutor. And if you really wanted to be castigated, hated, vilified, as I have been, not just for the last 9 years, but for the last 5 days, then again, for the love of God, whatever you do, don't prosecute Ken Paxton.
People look at this, and I've heard for, you know, the last 9 years that these security fraud charges are felonies, punishable by up to 99 years in prison. And from the outside looking in, people might say, well, maybe this case wasn't as strong as originally thought.
Well, let's break that down, Jason. First of all, the only reason why they were first-degree felonies which again, as your viewers know, are the most serious crimes the penal code envisions, with the exception of capital murder, and that carry a possible, the operative word being possible, punishment of 5 to 99 or life. What made these securities fraud cases first degree felonies was the amount of loss. It had nothing to do with any of the indicia that we see in first degree felonies. Murder, aggravated sexual assault, aggravated kidnapping, aggravated robbery, arson, wholesale drug delivery. Yes, they were first degree felonies. No, they were not your prototypical first degree felonies.
Was prison ever a likelihood if this case went to trial?
That's a great question, because I have seen the so-called legal experts in my town. And remember what Mark Twain said about experts. They're just some guy from out of town. And they were like, this is a farce of a mockery outrage, because he should be in prison. He should be at the WIN unit chopping rocks. And look, the answer to your question is two words: absolutely never. I'd never envisioned any scenario, any universe in which, by which, through which, that a judge or jury put Ken Paxton in prison based on either the third degree felony, failing to register as an investment advisor rep, or for that matter, the first degree felony securities fraud cases.
You've heard a lot of different opinions since agreeing to this settlement here. What do you want to tell people who might not understand this, who didn't go to law school, about why this was necessary in the end after dragging out for 9 years?
I would tell them that the oath that I took as a prosecutor almost 9 years ago mandated that my primary duty is not to convict, but to seek justice. So what does that mean? Look, I have spoken with a multitude of prosecutors, including half dozen or more elected DAs who I consider friends and colleagues. And they have impressed upon me the fact that our primary concern as prosecutors is ensuring public safety. So that if I'm dealing with a predator, a violent felon, someone who's a danger to society, our overarching responsibility is to warehouse that person for as long as we can, consistent with due process and fundamental fairness. Look, whatever you think about Ken Paxton, he's not a predator. So what then is the next overarching concern that I as a prosecutor have? And this is easy if you've ever binge watched Law and Order, the victims. That meant that I had to have their back. And what I think your viewers need to know, that the public is unwilling or unable to accept, is that in any criminal case, but by and large, and especially first degree felonies, remember, murder, aggravated kidnapping, aggravated sexual assault of a child, continuous sexual abuse, victims are seldom, if ever, made whole. Think about that. In a murder case, we can't resurrect the victim from the dead. In a child sex case, we can't restore that victim's sense of innocence. In a drug case, we can't pull back the poison that the dope dealer put on the street. But in these cases, in the first degree felonies, I have made the victims whole. I have ensured that they have recovered every penny that they lost as a result of their interaction with Ken Paxton. And make no mistake, Jason, that to me was the ultimate game changer, being able to do what few, if any, prosecutors are ever able to do, particularly in a first degree felony.
Brian, there was talk a few months back of a possible deal, but that one did not include restitution. Why was restitution so important?
Again, because to me, making these victims whole was the end all and be all. And I think we need to know that the original offer of PTI that was pitched 6 weeks ago by Ken Schaefer, my, you know, longtime friend and former co-counsel, was, with all due respect, toothless. It had more holes than the Iraqi Navy. All that it called for was 50 hours of community service in exchange for wholesale dismissals. But more importantly, it was a PTI, not on the first degree felonies, but on the third degree felony. And why is that important? Because if Mr. Paxton somehow steps out of line, we are able to literally kick him out of the program and go to trial on the first degree felonies. That initial offer of PTI provided for no such insurance policy. And that's why I came out and I had to watch a couple of clips of me at the presser from 6 weeks ago, that I would never under any circumstances accept a PTI. Yeah, based on those facts and circumstances, what changed were the facts. And make no mistake, like Winston Churchill said, the facts are stubborn things.
Lay out the terms of the deal. What did you agree to?
in exchange for dismissing the third degree felony of failing to register as an investment advisor rep, and ultimately the two first degree felonies, Mr. Paxton is on a pretrial intervention agreement, a contract, not between Mr. Paxton and the judge like your typical probation or deferred is, but between Brian Weiss and Judge Silverman. And within that 18-month time frame, he has got to, in this order, make restitution to the victims in an amount of, I believe, $271,000. He's got to perform 100 hours of community service, which is important because that's what every defendant does at a facility that we determine in Collin County, likely a food pantry or soup kitchen, that he takes 15 hours of continuing legal education and ethics, which is five times more than we have to take as lawyers at a course sponsored by the state bar. Why does that matter? Because Mr. Paxton has made it clear that he does not want any of his assistants to attend or teach at state bar CLE functions. That matter to me. He also has to report to Jed Silverman and I via Zoom every 60 days. So he is going to have to do not just what everybody in his situation would, but more so because of the unique facts and circumstances of these cases, Jason.
Brian, I was told the actual agreement itself is not being made public in this case. Why is that? It's a high-profile case.
Well, it's because of what the law in Texas is. It's because the Austin Court of Appeals has held that pretrial intervention agreements, because they are not filed with the clerk of the court, are not public records subject to a request for production under the Texas Public Information Act. That's why. Now, as a practical matter, I have been able, with the consent of Mr. Paxton's defense team, to be able to talk about the primary considerations that animate this pretrial intervention agreement, because that was important.
Two last questions. After 9 years now, any regrets about this case?
I've got a bunch of regrets about this case. Scott Becker, who was the then local administrative judge in Collin County, who appointed me, who remains a good friend, I tell him that I had to put him on call block after this, because if that call comes through tonight, knowing what I know now that I didn't know then, I'm probably going to take a hard pass. Look, there were a number of tactical decisions that I would certainly do differently that I'm not going to get into. But this was about public service. Like I said, Jason, I had only handled two other special prosecutions prior to this with incredible results. This, to me, was an opportunity to give back to the people of the state of Texas, all 28 million of them, most of whom now hate me. But what I've learned about being a prosecutor, again, is what they teach young prosecutors the first day on the job, which is being a prosecutor is about doing the right thing for the right reason at the right time without regard to the consequences, and being able to tune out the haters, the naysayers, the second guessers, and the internet trolls. I can look at myself in the mirror and know that I fully and fairly, without passion or prejudice, discharge that oath to the people of Texas, to Mr. Paxton, and perhaps most important of all, to the victims in these cases.
Last question, Brian. You have not been paid since 2016. Do you expect you'll ever see a dime of all the work you put into the case?
I have not spent that money yet, Jason, but I am cautiously optimistic that with the conclusion of these cases in criminal court, that the matter that is now pending in the first court of appeals here in Houston, right around the corner from my office, will be handled expeditiously and will result in a finding that Judge Bell, who again is a superstar, yeah, particularly compared and contrasted with her predecessors who liked everything about their job as judges except doing it, that her ruling that I be paid the $300 an hour that I was promised all those many years ago by Judge Becker was well within the heartland of the virtually unlimited judicial discretion that she possesses. And I want to believe that the first court of appeals, again, will do the right thing for the right reason at the right time without regard to all of the white noise that this case seems to engender like moths to a flame. Jason?
What's the final bill that you turn in?
The bill that I submitted for the work that I performed in 2016 comes to a little more than $90,000. And under the local rule that Judge Bell found arbitrary, capricious, and unreasonable as applied to me, would have paid me right around $3.13 for all of the pretrial work that I did, because I was doing the heavy lifting and outside work. Above and beyond that, over the next, 7 or 8 years, it's monumental, and it could probably start north of $200,000 or $250,000. Like I said, I'm not out shopping for new cars yet. I'm cautiously optimistic that the Court of Appeals will do the right thing.
Brian, good to see you again. Thank you.
Great to see you, Jason. Always a pleasure.
Okay, y'all, the conversation doesn't stop here. Find us on Twitter and Instagram. We're at Yolitics.